I'll do my I'll do the sound effects for the podcast. Some quaff, quaff, quaff. So we're already recording.
Oh,
that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay, ready? Okay. Hello, and welcome back to the 7 Minutes Podcast. We are all indeed still alive. Still alive and doing well. It's been a long time. I think it's been a little over a year since we recorded. Definitely had some, you know, life changes. I think the biggest one is that Zach and I got married. We got a kitten, so now our cat has a little friend.
It's 2v2.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing. Now I'm working on my garden. But that's about it. So, you know, it's as a reminder, you know, I'm Angela, or Angie to my family, doesn't matter. Professionally, I go by Angela. And I'm no longer Angela Marujo. I'm Angela Marujo Fornaca. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm joined by Zach Fornaca.
That's me.
Who?
Robert Marujo.
Hi.
And we have a special guest today. Our cuzzo.
Yeah,
Dom, another Marujo.
Dom Marujo.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm honored. She referred to me as special. I guess that could be taken in two different ways.
Well, so, you know, normally we kick this off with the, you know, what have you been playing recently? And, you know, it was like an update from the previous episode. Obviously, we're, you know, not going to go that far back. So we'll just start off with what have we been playing recently? And I guess I'll just kick us off. I've been playing Metroid Prime Remastered. For those of you who watched the recent Nintendo Direct from, I think it was like a week ago now or so, Nintendo just all of a sudden just announced out of nowhere, hey, Metroid Prime Remastered is finally here, and it's available digitally now and physically on February 22nd. And this is, Ruiner was like technically the first game that I ever bought both digitally and physically, but kind of a special case because it wasn't intended to be a physical release. But
you're talking about on the same system. Like, you've bought games multiple times, like Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
You probably have on different systems, but...
Yeah. But this was like a the first time I've ever... Well, I mean, February 22nd isn't here yet, but Metroid Prime Remastered will be the first game that I've bought both digitally and physically.
And that was because you just absolutely positively needed to play it right now.
Yeah, I couldn't wait.
That was a hell of a shadow drop, though.
Yeah. Like,
out of nowhere.
There was,
how long have you been waiting for Metroid Prime Remastered?
Like, year. I mean, at least since, like, the Wii, you know, when they had the trilogy and everyone was convinced, oh, they're going to port it maybe to Wii U. That didn't happen. And then still hopes that it'll come to Switch, but, you know, who knows. But, yeah, I wasn't expecting it at all. And when I saw it during the Direct, I was like, wow, is this real?
Wait, I thought it was on the Wii U. Oh, no, it was in the Wii Shop in Wii U, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was in the Wii Shop or not, but...
No, I don't think
all
so.
All I know is it was on the Wii.
It was playable
it was
on Wii U.
Playable. Yeah,
that's where I played it. The trilogy, whatever.
Because you could, it would upscale... Well, I guess if you had the component cables through your Wii, it would do it too. But if you're playing through the HDMI on the Wii U, they look really good on an HD screen.
Yeah, so that's been pretty great. I went back to Cuphead... I was actually, I've gotten farther, I think, than I did the first time, so that's been pretty cool. But I gave myself another break. I was getting too angry. otherwise, you know, still playing Animal Crossing New Horizons. I played through the Happy Home stuff to the point where I unlocked the ability to redesign my neighbor's homes. So, like, I got really obsessed with that, redesigned everybody's house, enacted my control freakism on my neighbors, so, you know, none of their homes were safe. They all look like how I want them to look now.
Are you still one piece of art shy from complete?
Yeah, it was all this time I've been slowly, because, you know, I have no control over it. It's just whatever Red has for sale, and so now I'm one piece away from completion of the art gallery wing of my museum. It's been a lot of Mario Kart Tour. This week's tour is wrapping up on Tuesday, but it was the Explorer Tour And it was pretty heavily Shy Guy focused, so, you know, right up my alley. But they released Explorer, Shy Guy, Light Blue, and Yellow. Re-released Green Shy Guy, who I've been trying to get for, like, 2 years, I think, because I missed him the first time around. And then next week is the Doctor Tour, and it looks like there's going to be a White Shy Guy coming. So, yeah, I've been pretty busy playing stuff.
It's like I told Angie, you know, there's an almost infinite number of Shy Guys they could release if they're just, like, naming him after colors. Are you really just going to be going back every week to get, like, a full 64 crayon Crayola set of Shy Guys?
And the answer is yes.
Jeez.
Is there a color, like, there's no question you'll do whatever it takes to get that one?
I think it was maybe more like
the theme.
So, like, the Ninja Shy Guy that came out, that one, I was I have to have him. And I did. I got him. But, yeah.
Didn't you mention they changed, like, how you get characters? Now it's not as random? Or is that still something that's coming?
No. So, they changed a lot of the fundamentals of the game. So, instead of, like, paying straight just, you know, US dollar or whatever your local currency is for characters... Now, you remember the rubies in the game? Mm-hmm. Now you use rubies to buy those special characters. Or, like in this case with this tour, Yellow Explorer Shy Guy and Green Shy Guy were the ranked tournament prizes, like, if you came in first or second place.
Okay.
So, yeah, they've changed it up quite a lot. There's actually a lot of things that they've changed in the game. I personally think it's probably a better experience overall. But it does kind of suck having things tied to ranking high in the tournaments. Because it feels like sometimes, like, the tournaments are deliberately stacked against you. You'll do great 1 week, and then the next week there's someone who gets some impossibly high score. And then that just kind of wrecks your chances of getting that character. So...
Then you got to spend the money to get it, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, because, like, Green Shy Guy, there was no other way to get him this time. I see. So it was like, so if you didn't score high in either week of the tournament, you're just kind of screwed and you don't get him. And that I think is messed up, and I don't think characters should be tied behind that.
Got it.
It's largely just cosmetic differences, right? I know the racers have some statistical differences, but it's mostly the fear of missing out of not having a complete collection or your favorite Shy Guys.
Basically, you know, every character. Has like a special item. So, like, if you race with them, you have more of a chance of getting that item. Like Ninja Shy Guy, it's the boomerang. You know, or Light Blue Explorer Shy Guy, it's the Lucky Seven. And every character's like that. So there is that difference. Like Green Shy Guy, it was triple green shells. Knight Luigi has the boomerang too. So there's that difference, but yeah, it's largely just
like
cosmetic.
Their acceleration and max speed are all the same across the board. And all
I
that.
Think there's some differences there too, like in Mario Kart, because, you know, racing, it kind of feels like, you know, Bowser, for example, has like slower acceleration.
I mean, but, like, the different type of Shy Guy, like, is Shy Guy the same all across?
I think Shy Guy is the same all across. I think. Funny enough, that's the only thing that I haven't really dived really deep into with this game is, like, those sort of stats. But, like, other things, like, you know, your cart and driver and kite combo and, like, the type of cart you should be using depending on the type of course it is, like, I'm, like, way deep into that, but I haven't really explored each character's individual stats though. So
very cool.
Yeah. So Zach, what have you been playing?
Yeah, let's see. I have been watching for a long time, kind of had my eye on an indie PC game which takes some inspiration from Dark Souls and some inspiration from Diablo called Alaloth. I saw it on a pretty good sale price, so I picked it up on Steam a couple weeks ago, played 40 minutes and decided that I hated it. It's just something about the controls don't feel right to me, and I didn't want to put more time into it. So I think it's actually... You know, I wish the developer all the success in the world, except for that success obtained from my wallet is the second refund I've ever gotten on Steam.
Man.
I mean, it's a perk of buying things on Steam. It's essentially everything is a demo because you can just, as long as you...
What's the time frame? Like an hour of playtime or...
2 hours of playtime within a couple of weeks, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that's similar to Xbox. Xbox, you can return, but you have to be specific. Okay, I'm going to stop talking.
Well, I'm curious.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, but I don't want my Xbox account
Oh, I see.
To be compromised over things I might say on this podcast that'll reach millions.
Okay. Well, for Steam, this is not even like misusing the policy. This is like the policy as.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I never misuse the policy. Xbox, yeah, I promise.
Of course. But I also, let's see. I played a little bit. So I played Resident Evil Village. I held off on picking that up. And that wasn't price sensitivity so much as I just really don't like playing games in first person. So I didn't stick with Resident Evil 7, mostly because it was first person, and waited until the DLC for Resident Evil 8 came out that lets you play the main game in first person, in third person, jumped on that. It was fine. It was not my favorite Resident Evil. Bit of a mixed bag for me, but even a bad Resident Evil game is still a pretty good time. That's been my experience with them. Like, I don't think Resident Evil 5 is great. I don't think Resident Evil Revelations, the one that was on 3DS, I don't think that one's great.
Yeah.
But I still, like, had a fine time playing it. And I think Village is better than that. And
6-2.
6 is inconsistent. Mm-hmm. I will go to bat for, like, the Jake and Leon campaigns in 6. I think they're pretty good. I think the Chris and Ada campaigns are pretty bad. Anyhow, so after that, I thought about playing Resident Evil Revelations 2. Did not get very far in that. Just marveled at how large the file size is when I re-downloaded that for Switch.
It's huge.
I had to clear like everything else out of the internal storage in order to get that to fit on there.
Why? I think it's the biggest game on Switch that I can.
Is it because it's episodic?
I think
right?
Because it was originally designed to be episodic, so there's probably like a ton of redundancy in the file structure.
Yeah, because I was curious about that too, because you know it is a 3DS game, so I just wouldn't imagine.
Revelations 2 is.
Oh, Revelations 2, right? Yeah,
Vita.
Yeah, it's a, really? it was an episodic Vita game, and then
Wow.
Yeah,
I played it on Wii U, I believe.
Anyway, I didn't get very far.
Was it on Wii U?
It might have gotten a port.
I can't remember.
I played either Revelations or Revelations 2 on Wii U.
Okay.
I remember, but yeah.
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 Interesting.
Revelations is on Wii U.
What about Revelations 2, though?
I don't think it was.
Okay. Oh, then I probably, sorry. Yeah. I mixed it up.
No, Revelations 2, I remember was like really, really scary and good at the start in the prison. But then for some reason, I just never continued with it. I feel like after I got out of the prison, I started to lose interest.
Did you play it on Vita ever, or did you just play the Switch version?
I only played the Switch version. My dad gave it to me. I don't know why he picked up Resident Evil Revelations 1 and 2, but he had never used the Resident Evil Revelations 2 download code, so he just like gave me the game, and I was able to play both of them.
Mm. Okay.
For me, it was the closest anything else in the series has come to being as fun as Resident Evil 4, but it's still not that close to Resident Evil 4.
You're talking about 8 again?
No, I'm talking about Revelations 2.
Oh, Revelations 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of scary, pretty good, like, you know, resource scarcity and action combat and things like that. And a sense of humor. Revelations 2 has a better sense of humor than most of the Resident Evil games. Anyhow, I didn't get that far in that replay. And just at that point, I was like, why am I not just playing Resident Evil 4? So I've been playing through Resident Evil 4 again.
Oh, okay, nice.
Most of the way through, the only downside of my experience with it right now is that I'm playing it on a system I haven't previously played it on, so I have to play it on normal instead of professional, so it's like a little easier than I would like. Mm. I've played this game like a dozen times.
Yeah.
But it's still really good because it's Resident Evil 4. I think it would probably get my vote for greatest game ever made. It's just a really good time.
Are you interested at all in the VR mode?
No, not really.
No.
It's the kind of thing, like, if I end up with a VR...
You'll play it, yeah.
...hardware at some point, yeah, I'll try that. There are things I'll try, but I wouldn't like, buy a VR setup for Resident Evil 4 VR.
Yeah, you did mention you don't like first person, so imagine first person and having...
Yeah.
...all this going on, your head movement and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus,
you can't see Leon.
Okay, guys, I'm gonna leave.
And then the other thing to mention, I guess, is that I bought a PlayStation 5. I've held out till now because I didn't really need one for anything, and nothing was really driving me to get one. But I know Final Fantasy 16 comes out this summer. I want to be able to play that, and I need a PlayStation 5 for that. So I figured, like, well, I keep hearing all these things over the past couple of years about these things being hard to find. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to wait until the game comes out to try and find it. So I did, and then I was, you know, looking for an excuse that made that $500 purchase feel less pointless. So another replay, but replaying Ghost of Tsushima on PS5. I'd previously played it on PS4. Really liked it. I think my favorite of the like Western Sony first person projects from what I've played. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Game's huge.
You mean first party projects?
Yeah, what did I say? First person? Yeah, first party. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think like of the like PlayStation exclusives, I'd probably go for Bloodborne and Demon's Souls over Ghost of Tsushima, but mm-hmm. among like the stuff from Western Studios, mm-hmm. that kind yeah. of like...
No, makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll move on to Robert.
Playing Metroid Prime. Been very busy. I guess since the last podcast, I've now become a teacher at a middle school on top of doing the game design classes at the college. So that's been very busy, but Metroid Prime Remastered's really well done. I was very shocked that it got announced and launched the day of that Direct. So that is hopefully a good sign that Metroid Prime 4 is on track. Are they claiming it's this year still?
I don't think so. There's actually been really no updates on that game at all.
Okay, so Zelda's the one that's just been confirmed for this year. So
and Pikmin.
Yeah, Pikmin.
I don't think any of us were bold enough to pick Metroid Prime 4 for Mm-mm. what it ended up being.
No.
No.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting because, you know, Metroid Prime is over 20 years old at this point.
Damn.
And its first remake was the Wii version for the trilogy because it went widescreen and they added the motion controls. And at that point, it was already a 7-year-old game, I believe, and was easily as good as anything contemporary. And now that remake is, let me think, so it's 2023, and it was 2009 when the trilogy came out?
14 years.
So 14 years later, Metroid Prime is still easily as good as any contemporary shooter, including its art direction. Like, the upscaled graphics are obviously amazing to look at, but I mean the base of what is there is just what was on the GameCube, and it still looks incredible compared to just about anything new. So I think that's really good. On my Nintendojo.com review, the website of which I am the editor-in-chief, my review of the game, the only gripes I had were the targeting reticle feels like it rests too high when you put it into the classic control scheme. So, like, you can play with twin stick settings, or you can do motion controls. I haven't bothered with the motion controls yet. I've heard they're not as good as on Wii. I think it's because you can't mess with the sensitivity as much as the Wii version. The Wii version really let you go to town messing with the motion controls. The Switch version, I guess, isn't as thorough. But regardless, I haven't tried that. But the twin stick setup, I'm sure, is fine for anyone who wants to use it. I messed around with it and quickly realized why the X and Y buttons are swapped, because if you try to fire a super missile, it's a nightmare. But if you hook up like a wireless GameCube controller or even a classic GameCube controller, you can make all the settings exactly as they were in the original, including the single stick moving and shooting. The game was designed for it. I feel like it works just fine with one stick. But the resting position of the targeting reticle is too high, so it makes it a little awkward when you're walking because it feels like Samus is slightly tilted up when she should be more facing down and straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
It was funny, too, because the X and Y swap, like, it's amazing how with video games you have muscle memory for so many things. And I had hooked up one of the PowerA wireless controllers, the GameCube controllers that they have. And I'm playing, and I kept hitting Y to fire a missile instinctively. And she kept going into her morph ball. I'm like, there's something wrong there. I'm like, there's no way that I'm just imagining this. I go, I'm almost positive these are swapped. And when I went into the settings and it specifically said to switch them, I'm like, they knew. I'm like, I'm not wrong. It was the reverse of this in the original. But yeah, it's a...
Wait, so why did they change it?
Because on a modern controller where X and Y are positioned, if you try to fire a super missile, you have to do this weird crab claw thing with your fingers in order to hit Y. Whereas if you have X above it, it's much easier to just hit X.
Wait, what do you have to do with your fingers that would require... Is there like a combination of inputs for a super missile?
Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to press everything that you need to at the same time, if Y is the button, you can't just hit it.
What are the buttons you need to press?
It's like A and X at the same time or something like that. Like you hold down charge, and then which is A, and then you press the missile button. And the missile button, when it's X, it's easier to just... I'm imagining holding the controller. This is great to discuss in this audio medium where you can't see anything, but imagine you're holding the controller. You have the A button pressed down.
I get it. It would be the left and right face buttons in that diamond if they hadn't swapped them. And now it's top and right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that messes it up. So that's why they had to make the switch. There was another thing. Oh, yeah. The thermal visor. I complained about that, too. I'm almost positive I'm not imagining this. In the original game... everything looks, you know, like the Predator. You know, you can see the thermal scan for everything, but it's clear. I don't know if it's crystal clear, but it's clear, and you can move around. In this one, there's this strange blur that they put, almost like they thought maybe the thermal visor was too overpowered or something. Like, I have no idea what the idea was to put it on, but it makes it so it feels really uncomfortable when you're moving around with it and you're aiming and shooting. I am not happy with that change.
It's too blurry. It's a little too hard to see what's going on.
Yeah, they need to switch that up. But I thought it was an incredible remaster. I think it's interesting that they didn't release the trilogy. Zach said that the way that the game was remade, I guess they were like actually, what's the phrasing you use, Zach? Like they're basically in the code.
Yeah, they ported the source code from what I understand, rather than like with the, you know, the Mario collection that mm-hmm. they did was emulation. And they used some like Lua scripts to change how things looked or behaved in some cases, but you have much more limited control if you take that approach compared to actually porting the source code. Pretty much the sky's the limit.
So one of the Retro Studios developers, I believe it was one of the Retro developers, was saying that if they were to make a trilogy, remake the trilogy, he doesn't think that they would be able to do 3 with traditional controls because everything was made for the motion controls. And he was describing like how there's hundreds of little interactions that are based on motion. Mm-hmm. However, motion is no different than a button prompt. Like, it feels like it because of the psychology of it, right? Like, you're swinging the controller, but really it's just inputs, you know? It's like, you move left with let me put it this way. If you flick up with the nunchuck or the Wii remote, that makes Samus's morph ball jump, if I'm remembering correctly. All you got to do is change that to a button, right? So it's like it doesn't need to be the flick up. You can just make it so that the programming is, oh, instead of the flick, it's just press X or whatever.
It's like back when Donkey Kong Country Returns came out and people, including me, were like, why do I have to shake the remote in order mm-hmm. to roll? Why can't that just be a button?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then that's what mm-hmm. they ended up doing on the 3DS version of it. There's no motion for that on 3DS, I don't think.
That would be entertaining to watch, but no.
Break the thing.
So back to the Metroid Prime 3 one, with that, on the Wii, wasn't it that if you did it more aggressive, they jumped higher?
I don't remember if it was based on that sensitive? Or not.
That would be a problem with the button, right? Because you can't like hit the A button like less or more.
If you're trying to do like an analog range of inputs, but you know, a lot of old games will have like different jump heights depending on whether you quickly tap a button or like press it for a slightly longer period of time.
Yeah, I don't think that was the case.
It wasn't that advanced with
Prime on Wii. I'm pretty sure it was just you flicked it up and she would jump because it messed up some of the bomb puzzles. You didn't have to really do the timing as well anymore. But anyway, the reason I'm saying all this is because if they're doing a source code port for all of them, because let's arguably say that they are, because that's been the rumor for like, I think almost 5 years now, 4 or 5 years. 3 could potentially still be ported to where there is physical controls. So I'd be interested to see that happen, because I think in terms of my ranking of the games, Prime's really good. I think I'm inclined to say it's first, but I really enjoyed 3. 2 is fun. I just think 2 has kind of a bland overworld that just doesn't have the memorable locations that the other two games have. So like Prime has, you know, Fendrana Drifts, Magmore Cavern, stuff like that. 3 has like that steampunk world that you go to. Just a lot of really memorable visual elements going on. And I thought graphically it was incredible. Like for being a Wii game, like it's really stunning. So to not get all 3 on Switch would just be heartbreaking. I do think that it makes sense, though, that it's not a trilogy. Like, they're not re-releasing Metroid Prime Trilogy. Mm-hmm. Because someone at Nintendo was like, no, we can charge $40 for each of these games instead of charging, you know, $60 or $70 for all 3 together.
I hope they realize that they can charge $40 for each of them and then wait a beat and then put all 3 in a steelbook and sell them to you again.
Oh, absolutely.
They know this.
Nintendo, just do it.
You don't have to hope.
Yeah, they know. They know their audience.
But yeah, like I really hope they bring all 3. But the thing is, it's fascinating because Prime is so amazing. I mean, there's some sites giving it perfect scores. I give it an A. Metroid Prime 4 needs to be good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is just showing you the level where the bar is set. Like, the game that's over 20 years old is stunning. Metroid Prime 4 has to at least be as good as that, and that's a tall order.
I'm going to go one better. Not only does Metroid Prime 4 need to be good, I'm going to say all video games need to be good from here on out.
What was that first game you mentioned? Hollow Moor? What was it? No refunds for the rest of 2023.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I've been talking about that a bit. And then also been messing with the Game Boy apps on Switch. So for those who don't know, Game Boy Color, Game Boy, and Game Boy Advance games are now on the Switch. Of course, they're all part of the stupid subscription service, but at least they're there. Everyone seems fairly impressed with the emulation. I think it looks really good. They did a good job with the screen filter of making it feel like you're looking at a Game Boy, and especially a Game Boy Advance screen. I thought that filter was done really well. And I think, I mean, now granted, a Switch itself is portable, right? You can play in both modes. But if you have a Switch Lite, it feels much more natural on a Switch Lite to play those games. I just wish you could remap the buttons. I hate the way the A and B button are set up. I want it so that I can switch it over so that, you know, the buttons are what I want them to be. And Nintendo just refuses to give you any of that control in the any of the Switch Online apps. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what I've been playing.
Super Mario 3, like running with the suit and trying to jump. I hate it. Like, it's backwards for me.
No,
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. I think Zach gave me the eyeball. I think I know what he's going to say. You can actually go in the system settings and remap buttons that way. So, like, you could say, oh, I want to make, you know, A, B, or whatever. So
that would make it for the every game, right? Not just that
game.
Yeah,
it would be for every game.
So they reverse the controls?
They're not technically reversed.
The buttons are reversed.
It's just that the buttons naturally are not the same as they are on the Game Boy. Just the I'm talking the physical layout of them.
On the Game Boy, it was like B and A. Now it's A and B, right?
Unless I'm misremembering. It just doesn't feel natural. I might be, you know, in a fog imagining that that is how it was, but I feel like the buttons just don't feel the same.
Listen, I know I'm a parody of myself, but just like get a Vita, hack it.
Oh my God.
You play every game you've ever loved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even the original PSP can run GBA games.
Mm.
They're gonna look better on a Vita though, and you can change the controls however
especially
you like.
OLED mode.
Well, don't.
So I am. You know, again, this is a case of just, you know, memories running rampant.
Mm-hmm.
However, so what I'm getting at is the button placement looks like it's the same. There's B and A in the same spots as they are on a Pro controller. It's just the issue is. Something about the setup on the Game Boy feels a little more natural, the way they're scrunched together. When you're using, like, a Pro controller, you want it so that it's Y and B, because your thumb rests naturally over those two buttons, and so being able to quickly just go between those, as opposed to B and A, is just, it's so frustrating. I wish Nintendo would switch it. So yes, they've technically set up the same, but anyway.
Well, Dom, what the heck have you been playing?
Oh, so just those two, Rob?
Yeah. I talked enough.
Okay. Well, first, thank you guys for having me.
Well,
I appreciate it.
Hopefully it's not the last time.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully. And then second, I'm going to piggyback on what Robert said about Metroid Prime. So I'm going to include a small spoiler for Metroid Prime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I'll make sure the audience knows that. But anyways, one of my best memories is... Robert playing Metroid Prime, and when I got to grandma's house, he pulled me in the room. He's like, Dom, I don't even remember the name of the suit because I haven't played in years, but it's the black suit she gets in
the
game.
Phazon suit.
And Robert's like, Dom, I found out how to get it. I'm gonna get it soon. Let's go do it. And we were in Linda's room, our aunt Linda's room, and he went through whatever he had to do. I don't remember every detail. But just seeing him so thrilled about seeing this black Phazon suit on Samus, me and him were just like, dude, it's so cool. We get to beat Ridley in this and all this stuff. It was just such a good memory. And that's kind of what I'm looking forward to in playing the remastered. Just kind of, you know, the nostalgia factor of it. I love Metroid Prime.
Yeah.
One of my favorite games ever.
Is the black suit part of like the critical path, or is it...
It's
an optional upgrade.
No, it's not optional.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to get it.
Because I remember when I got it because I got Metroid Prime, I want to say from Costco on sale years after. It was a player's choice one at that time. Because when we were younger, we would just get games on birthdays and Christmas pretty much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it just, I guess the release, I just never got a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got it, I remember even back then just how much joy it was.
Nintendo doesn't believe in player choices anymore, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, they stopped doing it. They did it for 3DS. And they even had it on Wii U. I believe there was some player's choice for Wii U. They have not done it for Switch.
Mm-hmm.
1999 GameCube games. Yeah. I had a lot of them.
I have distinct memories of being in Toys R Us when Conker's Bad Fur Day was out, and they couldn't sell it. Like, they just were trying to get rid of it. It was like $10 a copy. If I could go back in time, I'd buy every copy and just save them. That's all right now in Target. They have so many of the stupid Minecraft amiibo and then the Samus amiibo from Dread. And I'm just like, oh, if I had the money, I would just buy these, put them in a box, and then in like 10 years, they'll be worth double and probably just sell them.
Probably. Yeah, so this is actually the perfect time for me to join your guys' podcast. I happen to have been off work for 2 weeks, 18 days to be exact. So I've got a lot of gaming in. And my situation is a little unique because I have a toddler. He's 3. And my gaming time is almost split 70% with him, 30% my solo time where I can play my scary games and all that stuff. So it's actually been great for me because I'm sort of going back to games that I know he'll enjoy. For example, he's on a Sonic kick. So I'm playing Sonic games I never actually beat through.
Yeah.
Speaking of Player's Choice games, I had Sonic Adventure 2 on GameCube.
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle?
Battle, whatever. And so that's one. So I'll just mention the games I've been playing these past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, he's on a Sonic kick. So we played through Sonic Generations. I beat that a couple weeks ago.
That was really good.
I actually enjoyed the hell out of that game. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my favorite 3D Sonic games, if not my favorite 3D Sonic game. Mm-hmm. Sonic Adventure 2, not so much. Listen, that is, seriously, I never beat it as a kid, and now I know why. That is one of the most frustrating games I have ever played in my life. Yeah. Seriously. Mm-hmm. I beat the hero mode, the dark mode, and then the special story with Isaac, and I kid you not, I was raging so hard. The controls, the camera...
the camera, yeah.
Oh, my God. The unfair deaths in that game is just unimaginable.
Now, I remember, like, reading about this game, because trying to, like, decide if I wanted to get into 3D Sonic, and the answer was no. But when I was reading about Sonic Adventure 2, a recurring thing in, like, the reviews was, like, well, the Sonic sections are good. Unfortunately, you're also saddled with the Tails sections and the Knuckles sections.
Yes.
What I want to ask you is, are the Sonic sections actually good?
Sonic sections are good.
Okay.
And Shadow. Part of the game. Sonic and Shadow. Yeah. I would look forward to those. Mm-hmm. The Knuckles and the Batwing girl, a rogue?
Mm-hmm. Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Rouge? Mm-hmm. Forget it. Oh, my goodness. There's this one level, I swear I was sitting in front of the TV for like an hour looking for these collectibles you have to get. Mm-hmm. It was just so frustrating.
Yes, those levels, like you, they expect you to use this stupid radar. Yes. It doesn't actually work. I think the only good thing about the Knuckles levels is you get the Pumpkin Hill song, that rap song. That's
the
it.
Music. Yeah, the soundtrack in that game is awesome.
Yeah,
but yeah, the Sonic and Shadow sections are amazing. Like Sega's been doing this for years now, where you're playing and you're like, oh, can I just get more of that? You know, that really cool stuff with Sonic, and they're like, okay, but then you're also gonna turn into a werewolf. It's like, how about you just give me more of the Sonic shit? Yeah. Just think, you wouldn't even have to come up with another, you know, form of gameplay. Yeah. It's just, you know, you have to sit and think of the mechanics. You don't have to do a new character model. It's just, give me more of these grinding rails.
And then they did that with Frontiers, and we see what happened there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just so frustrating.
Poor Frontiers.
I like Sonic Unleashed, because it's like, what if a furry was even furrier?
No.
Oh, come on.
I was this close to downloading it, but I told my son, I'm like, I'm Sonic'd out. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I'll just go quick. We beat Kirby together. The most recent one for Switch,
Forgotten Land.
That game's amazing. Mm-hmm. The music in that game is awesome.
Yep.
That was tied.
And it's easy, Zach. I know it's easy.
That was tied with Pokemon Arceus for my game of 2022. Yeah,
that game was so fun, and Isaac loves that game.
I'm not opposed to other people liking Kirby games. I'm just explaining why I don't play them.
You should give it a try. It is easy, but the challenges are pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
So he loved that. Then two others, we beat K's and the Cursed Masks or something like that.
Oh, it's sort of like Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong. It's unapologetic. Donkey Kong. Like,
is it good though?
It's really good.
Oh,
yeah, and it's short. It's like five worlds the Kong letters are K's letters.
Mm. Yeah.
The secret levels are collecting little gems instead of bananas.
Mm-hmm. Is this the one with like the ninja bunny?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was great. It was like a 7-8 hour game. We beat it through. He loved it. I loved it.
Okay.
And then we just beat Super Lucky Tale.
Mm.
And that's a really good platformer. I was surprised about that one. Mm-hmm. I give it like a almost a 9 out of 10. I found out on Metacritic they're actually really highly rated. That's a good game. So by myself, without him, I went through Dead Space Remake, which is great.
Zach did too.
And then now I'm playing Hogwarts Legacy, which at first I wasn't too thrilled about. I think because my hype level was so high for it. Mm-hmm. But the more I played, I have about 30 hours in now. And I'm super intrigued about the story, where it's going. And the gameplay is so good. Like the battling. Mm-hmm. You can do stealth if you want. But I have so much fun actually going in and fighting like 30 dark wizards with different combos. You see your combo meter going up to like over 100 because I'm not getting hit and I'm doing like reversals. And it's really good.
That's cool.
And then one of the gameplay mechanics is they'll put up shields. Mm-hmm. And each spell has like their own sort of department, you could say. Mm-hmm. Like physical, or like, you know, when you levitate them, it's like yellow. Uh-huh. If you push them away, it's blue. And then you got to, you know, do the right spell against the right shield to break it.
It's cool.
So it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I got to get it. The Switch version is not coming out until like August or something. And it's going to run horribly.
Yeah. I would recommend probably going PS5 or Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the patch helped out real quick. The because I never play in fidelity mode, which is like 4K visuals, but lower frame rate.
Yeah.
But this one, with the ray tracing and the fidelity, the 4K, and everything looks really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind taking the hit on the frames in this game.
Okay.
Probably the only game I've ever played like this. I always play for performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really good.
Well,
that's all.
Before moving on, I'll just add a couple of things I forgot. I played, it's an indie game called Chinatown Detective Agency, and I was pulled in by the art style, and I gave that game, I think, a D on Nintendo Joe.
Also
D.
on NintendoJoe.com.
Yeah, D+, I think. But yeah, I won't waste too much time to say that that was one of the worst games I think I've ever played. And you can go read my review on NintendoJoe.com if you want to learn more, but that was just not a good game. And then I revisited Alice Madness Returns for the first time in like 12 years, I think. And I have it on the PS3, but I played it on Zach's Xbox One. It was on Game Pass. That game is actually even better than I remember it. I think it's held up extremely well. It's just a fantastic game. It's beautiful. It still plays well. Really intriguing story. But it also, once I beat the game, it unlocked American McGee's Alice, which I've never tried before. And I tried it. And I'm really sorry to everybody who is like part of the cult following of that game. I thought it was unplayable. It was clunky and terrible. And I'm sorry. Maybe, you know, when it came out, I can see why it was so groundbreaking and why people loved it. I just think today, I mean that literally. It was unplayable. Like I was even having difficulty climbing a rope.
I mean, I think I hadn't looked a lot into the Alice games except in the context of you being curious about them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the cult following is because of the way the game handles or plays.
No, it's because the character design is really great and the world building is amazing. And the voice acting in particular for the Cheshire Cat and Alice was very good, even for the time, but it still is. It's even better in Madness Returns. But moving on to our topic of the day, I'll let Dom actually introduce this, because Dom is the one who
inflicted this on us.
Yeah, Dom just texted us out of the blue maybe 3 weeks ago or so, a month ago now, and was like, hey guys, why don't we do a Metacritic fantasy draft for games that are coming out this year?
And we said, what is that?
Yeah, and Dom explained it.
Yeah, totally bit it off other podcasts. Yeah. But we each pretty much made a list that we couldn't repeat each other's games of upcoming games for 2023 that we think will do well. And so we did it in a snake order draft, starting with Zach. We decided the order based on age. So it went Zach, Robert, Angie, then myself. And we just started picking games. We did a little research before. We had, about a week before we actually did the draft?
Yeah, I think so.
So we just picked games that had a solid 2023 release date or not. Mm-hmm. Some of us took a couple risks, including myself. And basically at the end of the year, wherever the Metacritic ratings stand, we're going by critic reviews, not user reviews. We're going to tally up all of our choices, and whoever has the most points at the end will win. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be fun, and it's proven to be fun.
It has.
Robert has taken the lead and the favor to win it all, early.
Which is shocking because we thought that
we were clowning him a little bit.
Yeah.
Everyone doubted my
choices were
true. He picked Mega Man second. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't think second.
It was second.
Yeah. So let's go through the lists. I'll go with mine.
I'll just say that we each were given 10 choices plus two alternates. Yeah, so 12 total.
So I chose, and this is the order in which I picked everything. To be honest, I didn't even think about, like, the order in terms of, like, someone could swoop on things. I just was picking. Mm. Anyway, I picked Resident Evil 4,
mm-hmm.
Mega Man Battle Network Collection, Hogwarts Legacy, Octopath Traveler 2, Pikmin 4, System Shock, Theater Rhythm, was it Final Bar, I think?
Final Bar Line.
Suicide Squad, Metal Slug Tactics, Super Bomberman R2, Minecraft, what was it?
Legends,
and then Mina the Hollower.
He doesn't even know. And Robert was like, Dom and I both prepped. We had like tiered lists of like, I think this game is going to get at least a 90. This one's like safe 80. This one, I'm not sure if it's going to come out, etc. Robert was at the table, like on his phone, Googling video game release 2023.
It was great.
Yep. I can just tell by looking at certain things, knowing the pedigree. I'm like, oh, that's going to get this. This is going to get that.
He's the kid who didn't study and still passed. And
yeah,
I got an F.
Robert, do you have like regrets or second thoughts about anything that you picked?
Maybe System Shock, because I don't know enough about it. I don't even remember why I ended up picking that one. Suicide Squad is the one that I think actually could end up being a low score, because that game's been in development for like 20 years, and then I'm hearing nasty rumors about how it's going to have some live service garbage. Yeah.
Mm.
So, but it's Rocksteady, so I'm thinking that it'll probably at least get in the 80s, because, you know, it's not going to suck. Like, it will be competent in terms of design and gameplay,
mm-hmm.
because it's Rocksteady. There's other things that might bring it down. And then, other than that, like, I knew Theater Rhythm was one I was suspicious of, because that was on 3DS, so it's a touchscreen game. And Switch, you can use a touchscreen, but I'm just thinking it's going to be button controls, so there's a chance they could screw it up. But historically, I think there's two entries in that series. They both got good scores, so I felt decent about that one. The only other ones that were a little iffy are Mina the Hollower, because it might not come out.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess we're going to only aggregate our like the 10
top 10
to top 10, so it doesn't really matter. And then Pikmin 4 was a little bit of a question mark that it was going to come out too, but then coincidentally it just got a release date, so mm-hmm. I'm not too worried about it. Pikmin 4 is not going to suck. I just don't think anything on my list is going to suck. I think every single thing here is going to score well. Super Bomberman R1, you know, Super Bomberman R, that got really good scores when it came out. So I'm like, well, R2, I bet it's going to be just as good. So I feel strong about this. Mm-hmm. Minecraft Legends is getting good buzz so far.
Mm-hmm.
Minecraft, what's the one that is out now?
Dungeons
is really fun.
It is fun.
And they're saying Legends looks like it's going to be better. So I'm like, this is going to be a good one. So I'm confident in my list.
It's funny, when I was looking at your list, Rob, before anything even got scored, like, who would have thought Theater Rhythm would be at an 89 right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I was also hesitant about picking Hogwarts myself because mm-hmm. of the stuff surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like at an 89 as well.
Yeah.
You know, the two games that I was kind of worried for you,
yeah.
for your list, are damn near 90. So
yeah.
I think that puts you at a probably at the favorite at this point, because, I mean, you still have Resident Evil 4 and, you know.
Robert, do you?
Yeah.
Do any of those scores for Hogwarts or Theater Rhythm or Octopath surprise you?
No, Octopath, the first one got good scores.
Well, yeah. Did you think Hogwarts was going to be like all the way up at like 89? Did you think Theater Rhythm was going to be all the way up there? Because the previous two Theater Rhythm games were like
70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 70s, yeah. low mm-hmm. 80s.
Theater Rhythm was definitely a surprise for me. I wasn't expecting much from that game.
I don't know. I just had a good feeling about it when I saw it. When I saw the trailer for it, I was like, it looks like they got this right. So I wasn't, you know, too concerned there. Hogwarts, I mean, it doesn't matter if a game has a lot of hype. I mean, look at Cyberpunk, right? Cyberpunk was a disaster mm-hmm. when it launched.
Mm-hmm.
But Hogwarts had lots of good buzz.
Mm-hmm.
It only had negativity from, you know, like the political side. So my only concern was kind of like what Dom just said, which was, if it's going to score low, It's because they're intentionally making it low, mm-hmm. like targeting it.
Mm-hmm.
But what ended up instead happening was the people who were against it were like, we're just not going to review it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that it just kind of basically got honest reviews from people who were like, well, I'm playing it. It's really fun. And that's it. So, you know, the fact that it's as high as it is, that maybe is a little bit surprising. But beyond that, I had a feeling it was going to do well score-wise.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you picked it third, so you had high hopes for it, obviously, but...
Don't remember. That is the really order was just completely arbitrary.
Oh, yeah, you did
say that. Yeah, I did pick it on purpose, yeah.
Robert was like, oh, God, what else is coming out this year?
Yeah, right? It is. Every single choice, that's... Yeah.
Seriously.
I was like, what else is coming out besides Mega Man Battle Network?
Yeah. Well, but if I was betting on any of us, I think at this point, based on this strong start... Yeah, because here's the thing. Resident Evil 4 is going to go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else, like you said, is not going to suck. They're mm-hmm. at least going to be 78s, 80s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to... Because I have stuff on my list that I don't think is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's low scoring. And stuff that's low scoring already, like,
yeah,
that's not a good start. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll take this as an opportunity to segue into my list. Mm-hmm. I definitely have some that were... they don't have release dates.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not coming out this year. And I think that's actually going to impact my score. But starting from 1 going down to 12... Final Fantasy 16, Street Fighter 6, Bayonetta Origins, Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe, Dead Island 2, Wolong Fallen Dynasty, Fatal Frame Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, Assassin's Creed Mirage, Alan Wake 2, Hyper Light Breaker, and RoboCop Rogue City.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, RoboCop.
Bet it gets a 79.
Yeah, that one was just like, you know, kind of a rogue, no pun intended, just like rogue choice. I was just like, it could be good. You know, RoboCop is a popular franchise, so maybe people will like it because it's like over the top or something, or maybe it's genuinely good. So I took a chance on that one. Final Fantasy 16, I think unless they really mess that game up, I think there's probably a good chance that it'll score high. And then same with Street Fighter 6. I know the fighting game community is really picky. They might not like the control scheme, might think it's unbalanced, who knows, but I also figure that was probably a safe one. Bayonetta was one that I was like, Bayonetta is a loved series, and then this one is very unusual, it's unique, and then the art style is definitely one where like I can see, especially like games journalists kind of frothing at the mouth over that art style, so... Kirby seemed solid. I was like, you know, again, unless they really mess this up, I think this is probably going to be pretty good. Dead Island 2, I had actually just been reading an article about in Game Informer. And from everything I could tell and everything I read about it, it seems like it might actually be a pretty solid sequel. I honestly can't remember why I chose Wolong, but it's there. Fatal Frame, you know, those games haven't always been like the most, you know, the highest scoring games, but I think it's probably going to be all right. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, if it comes out, that one was one that I took a chance on because mm-hmm. they're claiming it's going to be winter. Who knows? I hope it is, given how long we've already been waiting. But if it comes out, I think that's almost certainly going to be pretty high scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Assassin's Creed Mirage, same thing. But again, that one doesn't have a release date. Same with Alan Wake 2. So I don't know.
I saw a tweet about Alan Wake 2 that they are well along
okay.
as far as development and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and they anticipated going gold. Something along those lines soon.
Okay.
So I think that one will for sure come out this year.
Okay.
Maybe Christmas time.
Yeah. And then Hyper Light Breaker, you know, everyone loved Hyper Light Drifter, so... figured I'd take a chance, but you know, I took a lot of chances here with games that do not have release dates.
Yeah, because
so.
Breaker's 3D, right? It's not pixel like the previous one.
I think so.
That seems like a mistake to me, but who knows? Maybe it'll be good.
If everything on this list comes out,
mm-hmm.
what do you think, now that you've had some time to reflect on your choices and sit with your regrets, what do you think is going to be the highest scoring game on this list, and what do you think is going to be the lowest scoring?
Highest scoring is probably either going to be Final Fantasy 16 or Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. Mm-hmm. Lowest scoring, probably RoboCop. But if RoboCop surprises me, then probably Fatal Frame.
I think the dark horse on this list for doing bad is Street Fighter VI.
Yes.
Because I keep thinking of 5 and how 5 came out and it had just like a handful of characters and everybody was irritated.
Bare bones,
And that's exactly why I was actually hesitant. But I was just like, I'm going to take a chance on it because it could either be as successful as 4 was or it could be the dud that 5 was.
Because 6 has some first-person mode on the way that looks a little iffy to me.
And some semi-open world stuff, too, right?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah. So I'm just not... That's what I meant when I was saying that. But it's kind of interesting thinking of the state of Street Fighter because back in the day when 4 came out, Capcom had oversaturated the market with just like the endless re-releases of Street Fighter and all that, and people were just kind of done with fighting games. I forget what the gap is between the last iteration of 3 and then 4.
It was around, a while. I was thinking around 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, so it's a big gap, and then along comes 4 and just completely reignites the, you know, the entire fighting game scene, it feels like. But then, you know, it feels like it's stagnated a little bit again. Other games have come along that have maybe supplanted it. But the interest is there. I mean, it's kind of funny, like, having middle school kids to teach because, I mean, actually, it's like I have the entire range with my job. It's like kindergarten through 8th grade. So I get a little bit of a sense of what kids find interesting. And I'll see them sneaking browser versions of Street Fighter 2. They'll be sitting at their Chromebooks playing Street Fighter 2. So they have a sense of who these characters are.
Yeah.
So I feel like Capcom has some pressure. Like, you better not make Street Fighter 6 suck because you have kids who are interested in playing it and you're, you know, you got to strike while the iron is hot. You know, they got lucky that with 4 they reignited interest. There was still enough fan presence, but you don't want to become too passe. I mean, these kids are all sitting around playing Fortnite and Roblox. You know, you want to stay relevant. So I hope 6 does well.
Sorry, what is this browser version of Street Fighter 2?
So I got to figure out what it is so I can attempt to block it so they can do their work. But they know all these sites to just like access games. So they were sitting and it looks smooth too. I didn't get to actually touch it, but like, well, see, the thing is they like me. So they were like, hey, look, Mr. Muro. And so,
wait, is this like the Super Nintendo version?
Yeah, it was a Super Nintendo version.
So it's a Super Nintendo emulator running in a website. I know, like, those have already been around for like NES games, but
well, since they know that you like games, Robert, you should just casually be like, "Hey, what's that site? I'm interested."
Yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, and let me know.
Yeah, and then secretly, you know, go and blacklist it. And then when they try and use it, just be like, "I don't know what happened."
Teach them a hard lesson about trust.
Yeah,
that's right. What Charlton Heston say in Planet of the Apes? Never trust anyone over 30.
Yeah.
You know, talking about your list, Ange, real quick, when you said about Street Fighter, like, they're changing certain things, like control schemes and all that, that brings up a good point about, like, traditionalist, quote, you know what I mean? Like, and the competitive scene.
Yes.
You know, you know, they made blocking a button now, or, you know, whatever changes they make to make it more accessible to, like Robert's alluding to, like, a different, you know, crowd. Like, for me, I'm all for that because... Generally, for fighting games, I hate fighting games that you have to block with the...
Oh, by pressing backwards on the...
I hate it. I can't do it. I just... Huh. My mind doesn't let me play these fighting games. So Street Fighter, I've never been good at them. But, you know, hearing about the updated and the different options you have makes me want to try it. Because I didn't even touch Street Fighter V at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, but reviewers might not like that. The people who review fighting games and Street Fighter specifically might not like those accessibility factors or anything like that.
Exactly.
They want it traditional. So, you know, but I think it should still be in the 80s, I think. I think it's a safe bet.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Oh, and then other thing, for Bayonetta Origins, before we did our draft, I had not seen anything about this game, really. And then they dropped that trailer in the Nintendo Direct. After that trailer, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I think that game's going to score high.
Yeah.
I think that... I don't know that it was clear that the... That Bayonetta was not controllable. Because it's like you control the demon.
Yeah.
And so that might have... that might disappoint some people. And that might impact how the game is reviewed. But on the flip side, if it's handled well, then I think it's going to help the game review high, because reviewers are going to be like, this is really unique, the gameplay is unique and it plays well. Like if it plays well and is like handled well, basically, I think it'll be a point in its favor.
To me, it's night and day compared to the first three games.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way different.
Completely different type of game, different style, like everything, different feel. So, when I saw the trailer in this last Nintendo Direct, I was like, oh.
Did it make you more confident or less confident?
It made me more confident.
More confident.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I will say, when I heard the narrator say that you didn't control Bayonetta
for combat,
I was like, that gave me a little pause. But then everything else, I was like, I think it's going to be able to compensate. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then Dom, I think it's a good segue into your list.
Yeah. So I sort of looked at it like actual fantasy football, fantasy basketball.
Yeah.
I was looking at, you know, medium low ceiling players and high floor players. Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. So my list, top to bottom, I went Spider-Man 2, Hollow Knight Silk Song, Diablo 4, Like a Dragon, Ishin, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Atomic Heart, Like a Dragon, Gaiden, Armored Core 6, Lies of P, The Last Case of Benedict Fox, Tales of Symphonia Remastered, and Wild Hearts. So, I really thought I was, especially my last two, I was like, okay, these are my backups. I want a high floor. You know what I mean? I know these games are going to do well. So, I went Tales of Symphonia because, I mean, the other versions all were in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no way they can make it worse, right? They did. And it's sort of bringing me down, like way down. It's probably going to end up being one of the games I kick off. Unless something doesn't get released, then I'm screwed.
Yep.
So, this kind of screwed up my strategy.
Yeah.
My backups were supposed to be my 80s or 75, 79-ish scores that I didn't have to worry about.
Yeah.
And they would only come into factor if, like, you know, Armored Core doesn't come out, which it probably won't. But, like, Last Case of Benedict Fox, I could have picked other games over this, but based on what I've been looking at and people's sort of feedback, it looks like it'll score good. And then going through it, Spider-Man 2 is a given. Hollow Knight Silk Song, there's still no release date, but it was supposed to release last year. So I'm like, it has to release this year, right?
Yeah.
There's no way it doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating E3, they're probably going to give it a release date for like summer or something like that. Diablo 4 is also a given in my opinion. Like a Dragon, I thought it would score higher, at least upon first reviews. Technically, it doesn't release till the 21st, so I don't know if that will change.
Maybe some last-minute reviews will come in.
Yeah, because 82, I mean, I was expecting, like, higher, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Star Wars Jedi Survivor, I played, is it called Fallen Order, the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fallen Order was good to me. It wasn't amazing, and I just hope they sort of build off it, but after we did our draft, I've been watching some gameplay trailers that they've dropped of it. And some of the issues that were brought up in the first one have not been addressed, it looks like.
Oh, okay.
Like, he runs, I forget his name, but he runs so funky. Like, the animation style, it's like, I don't know. They probably could have spent more time polishing that. And I think that's going to impact reviews. Atomic Heart, that comes out in a couple of days. I'm going to buy it. But it does come out on Game Pass, I think, day one. And then the other, Like a Dragon, was a risk. Same with Armored Core 6. Same with Lies of P. Those three games, they might crush me.
I can't remember who Lies of P is by.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good with remembering like developers and stuff, honestly. I just know that it's heavily like a Souls-like.
Yeah, it's got some pretty cool art design, too. Like some of the like creature designs.
Super if it
cool.
comes out this year, I think that'll probably be one of my higher scoring games.
I was very, very cold. Not just cool, I was cold on that game when I saw it at first, when it debuted during the State of Play. And then, like, the more I kind of looked at it and I rewatched the trailer, I was like, you know what, this is actually a pretty interesting premise. You know, taking Pinocchio and then making it into, like, a Souls-like, making it all dark and depressing. So I'm
you
actually...
were originally like dark Pinocchio. Get the hell.
Yeah, yeah. I know. That's what I said. I was cold on it. I was like, what is this?
See, the thing that's helping, I think, is the budget. You could tell it's a higher budget game. Yeah, like, I mean, that's my impression.
Yeah, I didn't get the sense that it was like some like half baked thing. It does seem like they're putting a lot of effort and resources behind it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that if it releases, same with Armored Core 6, those, I mean, based on what I read on Metacritic, all of them do pretty well. And I mean, that one, if it releases, but that's a long shot, honestly. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think you're in the worst shape. Like a Dragon's
I'm coming in last.
What, like a Dragon got 82, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, that's not bad. Wild Hearts at 80 isn't that bad. Obviously, Tales of Symphonia is a disaster.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
The rest of your slate, like, if they come out, they're probably going to score well. That's how I feel about it. I think your top five is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those last two, though, I'm telling you, I was predicting two of my games would get delayed, and those are going to be my, it's okay, I got 75s and 80s to back it up.
Yeah.
But Jesus, I don't know. So, Zach. What about you? Oh, did you want to add anything to me or Angie's list, Rob? Or you talked about Angie's to mine. You're good?
Yeah, Tom's good.
Okay. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah. All right. So my games from top to bottom, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, Starfield, Redfall, Forza Motorsport, Dead Space, Baldur's Gate 3, Season, A Letter to the Future, Stalker 2, Nine Souls, Kerbal Space Program 2, Sea of Stars, and Cocoon. Yeah, Zelda was a gimme. I was trying to prioritize games that I thought would do well, whether or not I was personally interested in them. It makes it a little harder to get excited about the games as they come out, but whatever. I'm not going to pick up Redfall. I'm not going to pick up Starfield, but that's fine. But Zelda, I am really excited about. I do think, you know, Breath of the Wild was like a genre-defining masterpiece of a game, and even if Tears of the Kingdom doesn't do a lot to change the formula, I think it's still like a really solid bet. Starfield and Redfall are both games that I gave like high priority on the list because of their pedigree. I know people have been like really anxious for Starfield for years. I think Bethesda has been sufficiently chastened by the kind of chilly reception to Fallout 76 that they're not going to risk doing some kind of weird monetization stuff to mess this one up. So I think they're really going to try and win people back with it. And then Redfall is what is that studio called? Arcane, right?
Yeah.
The Dishonored and Prey and Deathloop people. Critics love Arcane games. I think Prey is probably their lowest scoring game that they've done, but even that is not bad. And like Deathloop got crazy high scores. So I just kind of like did this one based on Arcane's reputation.
Did you play Deathloop?
Mm-mm. No.
But you play the other ones, right? The other Arcane games?
Also did not play them. No.
Like the Dishonored? No?
Dom.
What?
They're first person.
Oh, they are first person. Sorry.
I've heard a lot of good things about Dishonored. But yeah, for somebody else to play. But yeah, so that was on Arcane's reputation. Same kind of thing with Forza. Forza games... I don't play any of them, but they are like super solid in terms of like the scores they get.
It's been a while since a motorsport came out too. It seems like Horizon 4 and 5 came out before the last motorsports.
Yeah.
Well, no, I take it back. There was a 6, right? Forza Motorsport 6?
Maybe.
I think that was the last one.
Was there 6?
Let me see. I'll look this up.
Yeah, I think people are excited for like a simulation driving on the Xbox side. And Gran Turismo, it's getting some like hate, you know, based on certain things that went down at launch. So maybe Forza will capitalize it for that audience.
It is crazy how well Forza like ate Gran Turismo's lunch. Like when Forza came out, it was like, that's a Gran Turismo knockoff.
Yeah.
But Forza has just been like pumping these out consistently.
Yeah.
And they've always been well received.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because with Sony and the Gran Turismo games, they're so few and far between ever since they got to, I think, the PS4 era.
Mm-hmm.
No, PS3 era, I think. There were two of them on
PS3. PS3 had Gran Turismo 4, right?
It had 4. I think it also had 5.
Yeah, it did.
But, like, the development time just started getting longer and longer between games. And yet Microsoft shows up at the Forza games and is suddenly able to... Now, I'm not enough of a gearhead to say whether or not, you know, Forza versus Gran Turismo, like, you know, which one's truly more accurate. All I know is they both feel very realistic and they both look incredible. Mm-hmm. And yet Microsoft is able to pump out two series of Forza games that are all really well done, where Sony just plods along slowly, giving you Gran Turismo. So yeah, I mean, my only drawback on Forza would be people love the Horizon formula, where it's the open world that you get to explore in each car, and then you're going to, you know, race to race. So I don't know if returning back to a more traditional setup, assuming that that's what this next Forza does, is going to be a detriment or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully it does well. I mean, Microsoft has been starved for exclusives, right? Like, I can't think of the last Microsoft exclusive. Like,
Horizon 5.
Yeah.
Well, Hi-Fi Rush recently, but yeah.
But even that, like, I mean, that's not truly... I'm talking like a real hardcore AAA, you know, type of game. Yeah.
To answer the question, the last... There have been seven Forza Motorsports, and Forza Motorsports 7 came out in 2017.
So. Yeah, so there was, since there have been two Horizons since
then. Yes, two Horizons, yeah. Since then, it was Forza Horizon 4 in 2018, Forza Street in 2019.
That was the mobile game.
Yeah, and Forza Horizon 5 in 2021.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, this is what, almost 6-7 years since the last simulation racer for Xbox people? So maybe those fans are going to be the ones reviewing it for one. And, you know, I like that pick. I really do. That's going to do well.
Yeah, I went really heavy with Xbox stuff. Starfield, Redfall, Forza.
Yeah.
After that, I had Dead Space, which is the first thing from any of us that actually came out.
Yeah.
I really regret that I didn't pick it. Didn't pick it because I was, you know, similar to Harry Potter. I was like, no, I mean, not quite as similar, but there was still some, like, people that were kind of grumbling about the remake, and some people not super happy that it was being remade, and I was like, oh, maybe that's gonna impact the score, and so I didn't choose it. And
what's funny is that had kind of been me, like, when it got announced. I was like, well, the original Dead Space is still great, you guys, like, who needs to remake it? And I was really rooting for Callisto Protocol being better. I know I haven't played it, so I can't really speak to its objective quality, but, like, it did not review well.
I liked it a lot, but yeah, I hear you.
But how I kind of felt come January, and maybe this factored into the scores that Dead Space got, it got like an 89, was I just, like, really rooting for a game to review well. Because Dead Space came out, you know, a month after Callisto Protocol and a couple weeks after Forspoken, which is, like, two kind of, like, high-profile Metacritic disappointments. So I was just kind of hoping it would be good. I think it's fantastic, but more to the point, it got me an 89. So
at your fifth pick, it's similar to Robert's Theater Rhythm, because he picked Theater Rhythm 7th. So to get that kind of score from your fifth and seventh pick, that just, like, solidifies you going forward. Nice pick, sir.
After that was Baldur's Gate 3, which I don't know if I'm gonna enjoy Baldur's Gate 3 that much, because I actually, I'm kind of lukewarm on the same the game that those the same dev previously made, which is Divinity Original Sin 2. But Divinity Original Sin 2 is, like, constantly talked up as, like, one of the greatest RPGs of all time. People adore it. And I was also kind of worried. I was kind of worried with Baldur's Gate 3. When we were doing this fantasy draft, Wizards of the Coast was in a lot of shit with, like, its fan base and kind of, like, pop culture writers in general because of changes they were making to the licenses for the game. They've since walked that back, so I'm hoping that there's not any kind of, like, carryover anger at Wizards of the Coast that affects the review scores. But it should be good. Like, I know this game is already in early access, which is part of the rules we agreed on. It's like, it was okay if something was in early access as long as it hadn't been, like, formally scored yet. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be a disaster. I'm confident it's going to come out this year.
Turn-based RPG, or is it like Tactics and Fire Emblem?
Or something
completely different?
No, it's turn-based in the same way that, like, a Tactics game is turn-based. So, yeah, it's like
you move square to square, kind of, or is it?
I think it's not square to square. It's like you can move, like, a certain distance per turn, but so it's, like, a little more free form, but it's still, like, you're moving your characters around. So, like,
XCOM kind of?
Yeah, yeah.
I actually wonder, kind of going back a little bit to Dom's one of Dom's choices was Diablo 4. That could benefit from, because like I feel like Baldur's, because Baldur's, is, you said it's the third one, right? It has some like some old school love. I feel like Diablo's like that. A lot of people love it going all the way back to the original.
But
the mobile one came out and sucked. Like a lot of people, well, I don't know if it sucked, but apparently the microtransactions really pissed people
off. Yeah, I heard the microtransactions do, but I heard the game is good,
though. Yes, and yeah. So I'm thinking, well, you know, if 4 comes and it doesn't have any of that nonsense in it and is, you know, good, that's another potential good game to pick.
Was Diablo 3 the one, as someone I used to know, was a big Diablo fan, and Diablo 3 came out and he really disliked that game. I wasn't sure if that was just him or if Diablo 3 received kind of a mixed reviews when it came out.
Diablo 2 is the favorite of like franchise fans. Diablo 3, I think when it came out, it had much brighter visuals than Diablo 2. So just on atmosphere, some people disliked it. Mm-hmm. I think it's grindier than Diablo 2 in some ways, but I don't think people hate it. They just still prefer Diablo 2.
Was Diablo 2 co-op or was it single player? Are they all co-op?
They're all co-op, even the first one. But maybe Diablo 3 is couch co-op. I'm not sure.
I believe it was, but you could do it online too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only played it solo, and I didn't beat the whole thing. But I'd never played 1 or 2, so I can't really talk much about it.
Yeah. This is the point at which I feel like my list kind of drops off in terms of how confident I am in them. Seasonal Letter to the Future, I knew almost nothing about. I just kind of was Googling games that were coming out in 2023, and I took a look at it and was like, yeah, critics are going to like this. Fine. And that was about as much thought as I put into it. It got an 80, which is like solid but not great. Stalker 2 is kind of a weird one because like Stalker, the original Stalker game reviewed well, it's pretty well received. But like, as I understand it, the like key development team that made it actually left the company that made Stalker. Mm-hmm. And they're actually responsible for the Metro series. You know, Metro Last Light, right?
Metro 2023.
Yeah. But
well, isn't that weird how it's 2023 and like
it's when the 33.
Okay, I thought it was 2023.
But you can say isn't that weird in another 10 years when Stalker 3 comes out.
I had it in my 70s list.
Yeah. I think it's a gamble.
Yeah.
If it's reviewed as well as the Metro games or the first Stalker, it'll be good, but I don't know how likely that is at this point. Mm-hmm. Nine Souls is relatively low profile, but it's a good-looking indie game that looks like it's kind of in the same wheelhouse as like Hollow Knight. That doesn't mean it's going to be the quality of Hollow Knight, but it looked good to me from what I'd seen of it. Kerbal Space Program is a game I know very little about, but just based on like how the first one performed, I figured, the second one would probably be okay, too. Sea of Stars, we just got a demo from the Direct, but my thinking was this is by the people that made The Messenger. That was reviewed pretty well. So even though it's a genre shift, sure, I'll go for it. Mm-hmm. And then Cocoon, I was actually looking this list over like last week, and I was like, what the heck is Cocoon? Did I like copy-paste something from a different document into this file?
I came across it when I was looking, but I didn't even put it in.
It's the new game from the creator of Inside and Limbo.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Huh.
Damn. Yeah, that's going to do good then.
Yeah.
Because those ones, I think Limbo got it's like a 90-something on Metacritic, right?
Well, we'll see if
Limbo is, I think. Mm-hmm. Even Inside reviewed really good, too. They both did.
Yeah. This new one is supposed to be their first foray into 3D, I believe. It's not going to be 2D like the last couple games.
Yeah. When I was doing like my research, that is proving to be a waste of time based on my list. But I had Sea of Stars in the 80s, but I'm correcting myself. I had Stalker 2 in my top 36.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a top 36 of games like I'm just not passing up if they're available.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did like my 80s and my 70s that I predicted.
Yeah.
I like Stalker 2. I think that's going to do really well.
Yeah, I didn't know that Sea of Stars was the Messenger developer.
Yeah.
That game was really good. I thought it was fun. The writing just started irritating me.
In Messenger?
Yeah, there were these snarky bits where I'm not trying to be mean. It's just I felt, because I don't know if this was the intent, but like the writing started to come across as like, I'm really smart. I'm so much smarter than you. Or like, there was this like, just...
pretentiousness.
Yes, very pretentious. And it started to grind on me a little bit. I'm just like, can we pull it back a little bit? Mm-hmm. Like, because this is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. And the writing is funny in spots, but then you start getting this pretentiousness and it's just like, whoever's writing this is way up their own backside.
I honestly feel like the problem isn't pretentiousness so much as like pretentiousness that the writer can't back up. You know, mm-hmm. like Kojima is pretentious, but
mm-hmm. I hear what you mean.
He's working with more interesting ideas in the Metal Gear games, even if he's like long-winded and you're like, you're kind of like, okay, buddy. But at the same time, you're like, fine, I'll go read the Wikipedia page on whatever this is you're talking about.
Yeah.
Speaking of him, have you played Death Stranding?
No.
Are you interested in playing Death Stranding at all? Because it's on the PS library, and the PS5 version is free.
Oh.
You can download it.
Huh.
That's what I did, and I started it just for the hell of it. Actually, not for the hell of it. Karina kicked me off my Xbox. Karina's my wife. She's discovered that Disney Dreamlight Valley runs way better on Xbox Series X compared to the Switch.
Okay.
And so she's like, can I play? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I know that I can link my accounts and do the cloud save. And I'm like, yeah. I helped her do it. Because, I mean, my hands are tied at that point.
Dom's like, we need a Switch Pro today.
Yeah. or just buy another Xbox.
Buy another Xbox.
But she's like, man, these menus load so much faster. Like, this is crazy. So she's doing all her challenges on the big screen, and I'm on my monitor, and I'm playing my PS5. So I started playing the original God of War for the hell of it, and I downloaded Death Stranding. And that game looks crazy. And the beginning, it's like a really long cutscene. It reminded me of Metal Gear Solid 4 a little bit, like the length of the cutscene.
Yeah.
What do you mean the PS5 version is free? Do you mean like the upgrade to PS5 is free?
Yeah, you can play the PS5 version, yeah. Because they did a director's cut, cut. Because it released on PS4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the PS5 director's cut is available for free, and I downloaded it. And I probably played a total of 20 minutes of gameplay because I was watching this long-ass cutscene. And he's just picking up these boxes and throwing them on his back. And I got tired. So I didn't play more. But the graphics look good and the story seems kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of wonky.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
But that's Kojima, right?
Yeah, so. That's Kojima.
But yeah, you just brought him up, so I thought I'd share that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Zach, you know, shooting back some questions to you that you asked to me of everything you chose.
Zelda's going to be the highest scoring.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
I kind of almost didn't really need to ask
you
that
question.
You were
picking Zelda as soon as I said Metacritic Fantasy Draft.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, I'm going Zelda. And I got the first pick? What?
Yeah, I had it ready to go, and I was like, I'm third. Yeah. I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
But of your choices, what do you think is probably going to score the lowest?
Well, I'd be happy if it were Seasonal Letter to the Future. Put that floor at 80. But
it would be nice.
I think it's going to be either Stalker 2 or maybe Cocoon.
Okay.
If Stalker 2 comes out this year, it won't be Stalker 2. I think there's enough behind that game. Have you looked at it yet? Like gameplay trailers?
Yeah,
or anything?
A bit. I worry because it's like it's not actually from the same devs as the original, and so I kind of feel similarly about Dead Island 2, which Angie had like as a fairly high choice. It's not the same devs as the first Dead Island. That one has been like passed around a bit, you know, so I just worry about it.
I think it just looks so good that I just don't see it failing. I mean, it looks incredible, like the footage I've seen of it, graphically speaking.
They said the same of Cyberpunk. And look where we are today.
Yeah. Have you played Cyberpunk since everything happened?
No.
Oh, it's first person. Jesus Christ. Zach, come on now.
I feel like Cyberpunk is kind of an outlier, right? In terms of just being so poorly received, but coming from a fairly high-profile studio.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they really messed that one up. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that big
studios... launch.
The launch.
I'm not saying that big studios don't put out games that suck, but it's just like they really just kind of crapped the bed with that one. That had so much hype and they had built so much goodwill with Witcher 3. And then for it to just like, you know, face plant right at the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's better now, but it's still just, it's an uncanny what they did there.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because it's all performance based.
Mm-hmm.
It's like getting your games working at launch and you'll be fine, I think, most of the time. You know what I mean? Because if it played how it does today, that would have got tens, like, across the board.
Studios
seriously.
Have just gotten too comfortable with, you know, this idea that we, you know, oh, well, we can release something that's imperfect upon launch because we'll just have a patch. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we, as the consumer, I think, don't do enough to push back on that.
Sony did. They took it off the freaking digital store, which was good. I mean, it's a good wake-up call for these companies.
Sony basically told them, like, hey, we're not dealing with all these refunds because you couldn't put out something that
people wanted. And I think that these companies need to take a harder stance with devs who do this because gaming is a luxury. And yeah, you know, you don't have to play games. But we choose to play games, and we all work hard for our money. Mm-hmm. And so if you're asking me to pay $65, $70 on a game, you best be putting out a game that is good. Yeah. A game that is solid and playable upon launch. If little things come up, bugs, whatever, and you need to put out a patch later, okay, I'd still rather that not happen. But having a game that is just unplayable or just really bad, and you need to have that day one launch or patch, that's no good. Like, come on.
So I bought Cyberpunk day one. I didn't have an issue, really, because I had the Series X version when I bought it. The problems all sort of came on the last gen systems, like PS4, like base PS4, not the Pro, Xbox One, base Xbox One. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of the problem. Like releasing the cross-gen games, it couldn't run it. And, you know, I mean, I'm not giving the developer a pass or anything because it's still unacceptable if you're going to release it on the system. But I mean, you know, they're still releasing PS4 games. Like Ragnarok was a PS4 game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think Final Fantasy 16 is going to be one of the only PS5 only games. I mean, I take that back. Demon's Souls, Ratchet and Clank, and
Returnal's PS5
Returnal
only,
are three PS5 only games. But I'm just saying, like, you know,
it's impressive. And I honestly, like, cross gen has worked as well as it has with like Horizon and Ragnarok or whatever, is impressive.
It is. Mm-hmm. But playing Ragnarok, I mean, I've listened to this, you know, complaint on several podcasts, especially PlayStation specific podcasts. It's like, dude, it's a PS4 game. Like, there's so many instances where Kratos is like walking through the, you know, caves to load everything. Yeah.
Same is true of, like, you know, I realized Final Fantasy VII Remake was released on PS4 and then PS5. Mm-hmm. But like, no matter what system you're playing on, you're constrained by the same like slow walking segments and like the way they're like shaping the level design around those constraints.
Yeah.
Cameras that close in on Cloud or on Kratos or whoever.
Yeah.
So that you have fewer polygons in view, right?
Yeah. Like Rift Apart, there's no way that could play on PS4. I don't know if anybody here has played it on PS5.
Not yet.
Like some of the gameplay elements, like you do these rift jumps where you see like a rift in the distance and you click a button and you go and sort of transfer into that area. It's pretty crazy. And the graphics and everything, I'm like, there's no way this could run on PS4.
Yeah.
You know, but it's evident in games like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure Final Fantasy 16 will be the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, just the trailer of Final Fantasy 16 just looks insane.
Yeah, it's interesting how, you know, the shortages that ran rampant from the pandemic and even before, well, PS5 launched, was it right when the pandemic struck? It was like right before it, I think.
Well, it came out in, what, 2020, right?
Was it 2020?
I think
November 2020?
I think it was 2020.
So it was in the middle of
the pandemic.
Yeah. So, like, I'm just curious what this console life cycle is going to be like. Because, Switch is still, well, I think it's fallen behind a little bit in Japan. I think I've been hearing that PS5 has been taking the number one spot there recently. But for the most part, Switch remains on top. It's easily the weakest graphically of all of the consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Switch doesn't really seem to care about, or Nintendo doesn't really seem to care about the lack of third-party support for certain games.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, look at Activision. They're talking about, oh, we want to get Call of Duty on Switch. Like, they're saying Switch. They're not saying next Switch. Mm-hmm. They're just saying Switch. So Nintendo's in this interesting position of the Switch is underpowered and dominating. And they're just sort of sitting there, and I'm sure just thinking, well, we've got millions of these things installed. It continues to sell millions. We're in no rush to come out with the next system. And then you have Sony and Microsoft, where, you know, Sony's the clear leader between those two. But both of them have taken forever to create their install base. Now, for the most part, every time they would put out batches of PS5s and Series X's, they would sell out. The Series X would sell out slower, but you know, like you could go to a GameStop when they would put out batches and they'd be there for a little while. But inevitably, both of them, they'd just be gone. So whatever they put out sells, but they're limited by what they've sold. So now we're at a point in 2023. We're going 3 years in where they're still putting out last-gen games, you know, concurrent with current versions, you know, so PS4 and PS5 version of a game. When the hell are they going to launch their next systems? Because, you know, they talk about console cycles. They last, I mean, what is it, at least 5 years. Mm-hmm. And what was, I think the longest was the PS3 into... PS3 into PS4 era, right? Wasn't that like 7 years?
I think one of them was seven.
For a very long time.
Well, PS4 to PS5 was pretty long too, right?
Yeah.
PS4 was what, 2013?
I was going to say 14. Maybe it was 13.
So that's, you know, I think each of these we're talking like 7 years for them. But it makes you wonder if these consoles are going to last even longer, because it's taken so long to just get to the point where you can even go into a store and just find a PS5 without having to wait in line.
Yeah.
Yeah, PS3 to PS4 was 7 years.
The one thing I'll say to that is, like, you look at PC gaming, I think that's sort of another benchmark, like, for this whole thing, this whole topic. It's, you know, you can buy PCs now that run crazy specs, mm-hmm. like, you know, compared to the PS5 and Xbox. Mm-hmm. So maybe Xbox and PS5 won't be able to afford to have a long life cycle, because...
That's always been the case, though. I mean, it's always been PCs ahead.
They are ahead, but I mean, the price points, you know, like, you could buy a supercomputer any given, you know, year. But, like, you know, if seeing the PS5 and Xbox Series as it is right now for another 5 years, the rate these graphic cards and, like, you know, PC... you know, components are changing and upgrading over 5 years. It's going to be like the graphics card, you know, 7070 or something. Who knows? But
it depends. Like, obviously a big part of all this is what consumers are willing to pay for, right? Like, if consumers don't even have the PS5 in their hands now, when they get one, are they going to want to turn around and buy another console 2 years later? You know?
Yeah. But you're right, Rob. It is interesting. This is like one of the first times, you know, they've had to deal with, you know, not being able to produce, as you know, systems to sell. Mm-hmm. Like PS4 games, when did they stop making PS3 games? Like, was it 3 years in? No way, right?
No, I don't think it went quite that long. The only ones that usually last that long are the sports games. Those, they'll always stretch a few years. So it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you can get Madden, whatever, and you can still get the previous SKU. But yeah, like this, like in terms of especially like major projects, it's been almost everything. It's like, hey, here's the PS4 and the PS5 version.
Apparently the last game to release on the PS3 was Shakedown Hawaii on August 20th, 2020.
Oh, that was a very unusual
game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I have that game. It's really good. But that guy was crazy. It's V-Blank. I forget his real name.
I think I mean more like first party, like, you know, big hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I'm curious what's going to happen. I mean, they talk about how when NES was in its prime, it was like a third of Americans owned an NES. And so Nintendo was just like, we're not interested in putting out another system. Like, we got a third of this country that is, you know, has our console and plays our games. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until Sega came along and really forced the issue. And then Nintendo was like, all right, we got to do an SNES. They had angry parents, too. Like, when they transitioned... Like, because it was, I guess, a fairly... Well, you know, they had the Atari and all that before, but, like, the love of Nintendo was huge. The NES, like, was so many games and consoles, and you had parents who were just, like, insistent. They were like, you know, so you're going to keep supporting the NES, right? You're going to keep putting games out. And Nintendo, at the time, was saying, oh, yes, you know, we're going to support this and the SNES.
I just watched... So I got on this weird kick, found myself down a rabbit hole of watching old Nintendo... training videos, internal training videos. They are fascinating. I definitely recommend watching them. But I watched one. I cannot remember. I think it was from 91. I think. But it was like a Christmas time holiday training video. And it was supposed to walk the employees through these different scenarios of like this, like how to handle this angry customer or this customer problem. And one of them was the scenario they played out of this guy who's like walks up to the Nintendo employees like, I'm not really happy with you, with your company, like crosses his arms. The employee's like, oh, why is that, sir? And he's like, well, because the SNES is coming out and I bought the NES and I invested all this money into it, bought all these games. And the employee says, oh, don't worry. We're still going to support the NES. And I think at the time it was like the Game Boy, NES and SNES were out. And I think that's what she tells him. Mm-hmm. But it was just so funny because like thinking, you know, she's careful to not say we're always going to support it. She just says, oh yeah, we'll keep making games for it. And then, you know, I'm sitting in here in 2023 watching this video, just internally laughing, thinking like, man, and how many, just the handhelds alone, the different iterations of the handheld that came after that, you know, not to even get into the different consoles post the SNES.
So. You know how this goes. We have no current plans to discontinue support.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's what Nintendo said at the time when the DS came along. They were insisting that the Game Boy was going to remain its own thing. The DS was like a third pillar. As I know, that's the
that could also
one.
Play Game Boy games, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it could.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the way they phrased it that way is because there's like, well, what if it's a flop? We don't have to say that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
no, that's a good point. I was going to say something, but I forgot. Damn it. Oh. Never mind. Forget it.
Well, this...
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Go ahead.
The Switch. Do you guys think... Has it already been the longest Nintendo console life cycle? Or not yet?
Mm-hmm. No, not yet. We went for a while.
We did go for a while. Yeah. Do you think at the end of the day, Switch will be?
So they're going to try to make it...
So the Famicom came out in 83, I think.
Okay.
Super Nintendo didn't come out until 1990. That's 7 years. N64 was what, 96.
Switch is going on 10 years soon.
GameCube was 2001.
Switch
is it?
Yeah, GameCube I think was 2001. I know
Wii was 2006.
Switch? I want to say Switch was 2024 or 2014.
2017.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because Switch was 2017 because Zach and I were living together
right,
in
tripping.
Oakland.
I am hella chirping.
2017.
Right now,
I got mixed up.
We're almost at 7 years.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a long time.
So it's still behind like the Famicom / NES, but not by much. Both of those, I think, are still behind the original Game Boy. Game Boy / Game Boy Color came out in, I want to say, 89, and it wasn't replaced by the Game Boy Advance until 2001. Was that right?
Yeah, but I always find it kind of odd when people are like, they lump the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color together.
They
like,
should be lumped. It's practically the same thing.
No, they're not.
Yeah, so that was more than a decade.
And the Wii was how long?
I don't know. I think Angie's looking it up.
So the Switch didn't come out when the PS4 and Xbox One came out?
No, it was 2017.
So the GameCube came out
with, like, Breath of the Wild was a launch title.
GameCube,
man, I'm tripping.
Was
right now.
2001. The Wii was 2006. Wii U was 2012, and Switch was 2017.
Yeah, Wii U came out before PS4 and Xbox One.
Oh, okay.
So it was touting its PS3 graphics.
Oh, okay. So really, it's at that point, 7 years, right?
So it's almost going to be at seven. So it's at six. So it's close to seven.
There's definitely going to be something next year. There has to be, right?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I think Nintendo. How many Switches have been sold? Do we know that number?
It's up there.
Let's wait a second to see.
I mean, it's over 100 million, right?
Well, I want to know the number.
Total Switches.
I think I listened to a podcast say it's still behind PS2 or something, but it's like one of the best selling ever.
This is an excerpt from Wikipedia. Let's see. By the end of 2020, total Nintendo Switch family units had outsold the lifetime sales of the Nintendo 3DS by selling nearly 80 million units. By December 2022, over 122 million Switches with 994 million copies of games had been sold for the platform.
So what's the number?
122 million.
That's of 2022?
Yeah, by December 2022, they had sold over 122 million Switches.
And how many Americans are there?
Like 350 or something million.
Is it 350 million?
I think so.
So one in every three households? But that's worldwide numbers, right?
Yeah. Those would be worldwide.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, do we know the number sold in America?
I don't know, but you're
trying to make
question,
a point about saturation.
Mm-hmm. There's about 331.9 million Americans as of 2021. Total Nintendo.
Yeah, but you got to think about how many of those people are Roberts also.
That are just going to buy Switches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, regardless, it's a big chunk of people that mm-hmm. own a Switch in this country. You know, it might not be at a third like the NES was, but it's still up there. And then you think about people who share systems, like siblings, like that kind of situation. There's a ton of people playing. And I think that Nintendo, they probably feel some validation when they look at like PS5 coming out and Series X coming out. And it's like, oh, well, those are the new, more powerful systems. And they're sitting, it's like, huh, we're still number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 6 years have gone by and it's like, we're still number one. You know, we might fluctuate here and there with PlayStation, but for the most part, we're on top. All of our games tend to sell well. I think Nintendo just put out some sales data for some of the recent games that came out. And I think Bayonetta 3 is already over the million mark for number of units sold. It's like, they made all this money off of this console. Yeah. They have to just be sitting and saying, we already proved this point with Wii. The graphics don't really matter that much. It's how much fun everyone is having. Because the Wii, it was the same thing. Wii didn't have enough horsepower compared to the others. Was the number one system for that whole life cycle. They just kind of messed up with Wii U. I will never forget when they did the tech demo for it. And they were showing off, like, it was like some cherry blossoms floating or something. And it's just like, yeah, congratulations, you're at HD now. Apparently this thing's a little stronger than the PS3. And you know PS4... and Xbox One are coming out.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? It's like, but they thought, again, it's like, well, we proved we could get away with it. It's like, well, yes, but you didn't offer a compelling enough product.
Yeah.
Wii was compelling. Well, Switch comes along, it's compelling again. Yeah. So as long as they keep doing what they're doing, because I think that at this point, can Nintendo even switch back to doing just a traditional home console? Like, I think they have to do this all-in-one forever now.
Well, then they're tied to, like... you know, mobile boundaries, chip technology, yeah. Things like that. So I think, I don't know, surely they've considered making a successor to the Switch by now. You know, mm-hmm. like they are just probably paying attention to what developments are happening in components and what they can get for cheap and like where there's really like a step up in terms of like what's possible.
Because like, I don't see this gimmick ever going away. Like Nintendo kind of brought like, motion controls were considered gimmicky, right? But like to an extent, they're still here on pretty much everything. I think there's motion control capabilities in the DualSense, right?
But not on the Xbox, right?
Xbox doesn't have it. But regardless, like the motion stuff, you can take or leave, right? But the concept of I can take this, plug it into a TV, or play it on the go, like that concept's never going to become dated. So Nintendo is kind of in this interesting spot where it's like, well, you're basically just going to be iterating on this for the rest of the time you're making home consoles, and it's just a matter of how much power can you get it to pump out.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I don't know if that's true. Like, I can see that possible future, but Nintendo has always been kind of like, well, maybe not always, but like for 20 years at this point, they've been like, let's find a new market.
Mm-hmm.
A new uncontested market, a new concept that no one is doing yet.
It just seems like it would be stupid, though. Like, you're abandoning this why. Like, what about this has become passé? Like, this is, like, the ultimate inconvenience, especially for, like, you know, Nintendo, no matter what, they're going to have that family demographic. It's like, hey, congratulations. You want your TV to watch stuff? Give the kid the Switch. They can sit and play with their own screen. And it's and exactly. You don't have to buy two That's systems anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, they're in an interesting... I don't want to say they're painted into a corner because it's a corner you'd probably want to be in, but I don't know how they switch it up other than like maybe introducing something else, you know, like it's a secondary thing. Like, hey, here's this new thing that goes along with the Switch, you know, it's its own standalone. You don't have to buy it. I don't know.
Yeah, I was really going to say what you said about, you know, parents, right? They're buying their kids Christmas presents or birthday presents. And it's like, you know, you have this thing that can go on the TV and play. You know, we can all play together, but we want to use a TV. Go ahead and go in the corner and play on your Switch. You know what I mean? Like, that element of it is just... Plus, there's a lot of kids that are game, like little kids that are playing games. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like my, you know, not that my middle school is the be all end all, but I was interested when I started working there, and like every class I taught, like the kids, like we talked to each other, like, who's, you know, what's your name? Whatever. What are you going to do? And then I would poll them and I would say, who has a PS5? And a bunch of hands would go up. Who has an Xbox? Hands would go up. I'd be like, who has a Switch? And man, it was like almost every class. It was like 90 to 95% of the class, every kid raised their hand, they have a Switch.
Yeah.
So.
But like, okay, so suppose PS5 or Xbox, I don't think game streaming like Stadia or Luna style game streaming is at a mature enough point to like really be a threat to Nintendo or other consoles at this point.
Stadia's gone, right?
Stadia's gone at this point, but like that kind of streaming. Yeah. But like, I don't think it's crazy to think that you might have, you know, a PS5 that could all, or something like a PS5 that could also stream to a phone or some other device in the household that was like attached to a controller. Like it seems, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here.
Xbox has tapped into that. I think
Xbox has tapped into that. Yeah.
Every game, every console.
Yeah. But like if that becomes like a little easier, or like once tablets become, or cheap phone like devices become cheaper and more ubiquitous, like you could just like, maybe Xbox could just sell like a cheap,
it's gonna be an app
tablet that does nothing but this. Yeah. You just snap it onto your controller, right. And now like at home at least you can just play Xbox games off TV, hand that to your kid. So I don't know, like there are going to be other technological changes that happen, different innovations, and Nintendo's going to have to react to those. They're in a really good place right now, right?
There's a big group of people that want consoles to become an app, that wanted to be Netflix. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the whole Xbox Game Pass thing, which I'm fine with Xbox Game Pass as long as there's always an option to buy a game, at least digitally, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, Xbox, you know, the Game Pass side, it's fine, but I just want to make sure there's always options.
I want to own my games.
The day they say Xbox games is streaming only, like some of the Netflix shows is only, I am probably... I just don't support that. That's not my way of gaming. I don't like that.
Me neither.
It's too controlling. I mean, it's not like they can't manipulate you and do stuff now, but like the rental model is incredibly predatory.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what Nintendo's doing with Switch Online. Like, I'm happy to have the games that are there, but it's predatory.
They can pull it anytime.
Yeah, they can pull it at any time. You have no control over what is or isn't there. So, like, let's say you got a subscription predicated entirely on access to GoldenEye. And then maybe 6 months from now, for whatever reason...
They pull it,
you know? It's like, oh, okay, well, I only have this subscription. You know, I pay for a year, and now the game I want is gone, and I'm stuck with this subscription that I don't want.
Look,
and that,
how bought into Mario Kart Tour and Animal Crossing Pocket Camp I am. Like, at any moment, Nintendo could just decide we're shutting off the servers, we're no longer supporting it, just like they did with Miitomo. Yeah,
yeah. Well, the other thing, too, with that is... I
forgot about Miitomo.
Yeah, I still have it on my phone out of
principle. That's a good point you brought up, though, Zach. Like, you know, the whole sort of adapting to the you know, the norm. It's like, what are things going to look like in 5, 6, 7 years?
Yeah, because remember, like, the DS printed money, and then the iPhone happened, so it's not like they could, Nintendo could do the DS a second time and be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they did the 3DS, and it was successful.
Yeah, I think not on the scale of the DS, though, so they had to adapt.
Yeah, I think, though, that there's a little bit of this fallacy that, like, the kind of, you know, not to be too cruel, but, like, the kind of dipshit game journalists have been, like, touting for, like, over a decade now, which is... this is the last game console. I think that talk became steady with PS3. When the PS3 era came, they were insistent, this is the last game console. And then PS4, this is the last game console. Yeah. Now, you're not hearing it quite as much, because it seems that people are just kind of getting the hint that it's like, yes, technology comes and it could technically supplant this thing, but people still want this device, so it's not going anywhere. So, yeah, you do have to adapt. I know that like 3DS sales were lower compared to DS, but also 3DS just wasn't as good.
Yeah.
Of a concept. Like, for one thing, it didn't have as many inventive games as DS had. I think that ultimately that stupid 3D screen was more of a detriment than a positive. Like, it's an interesting gimmick, but if you look at games like Brain Age, there was just something so natural about how you flipped open a DS, both the screens were the same size and right next to each other, and you would just interact with the touch screen holding it like a book. With the 3DS, it was almost impossible to do that. You couldn't do it with the 3D on. And then with the 3D off, it just, like, there's something about that screen. That's why I prefer my 2DS. The 2DS screen doesn't have any of that gimmick built in. And to me, it just looks better when you have the 3D off, because it doesn't have 3D at all. When you turn the 3D off on your 3DS screens, something doesn't look right. And I don't know what it is. So I just think as a concept, 3DS just wasn't as strong compared to the DS.
There is a difference in the market reality, though, in terms of like smartphone penetration when the DS came out versus when the 3DS came out, even among kids, right? And that's a reality that Nintendo has to deal with. They can't just make a better product and have that be enough. They have to worry about what everything else in the home, in the market is doing.
Mm-hmm. That's probably why Sony pulled out of mobile gaming, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not mobile gaming, but like handheld gaming. Portable gaming. I mean, they saw the writing on the wall a little bit, you know, like iPhones and tablets are...
It's why Nintendo went into mobile gaming. Is again, you know, they could see we can.
Oh, they cashed into like iPhones.
Cash cows. Yeah, it's Mario Run, Dr. Mario, Miitomo, Mario Kart Tour, Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. There might be one more I'm forgetting, but yeah.
Do you think it was more of
Fire Emblem Heroes? Yeah.
Of we're a Nintendo, we have to do this, or let's try this and give it a shot.
Well, I think you have to be responsible, I guess is the word for shareholders, but you have to think smart, which is, okay, this technology's everywhere. It's certainly supplanting some of our consumer base because you have some parent who's just like, well, I have an iPad, that's good enough, here you go. But I also think that along with that, you have the continued success of the console.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, at this point, when did PS3 come out again?
2007.
So 2007. You go back to 2007. I think the iPhone's out at 2007, right?
Mm. Yeah, so, pretty sure.
You know, technology's evolving. PS3 comes out, and the pundit who reads too much Wired and thinks they know everything is like, oh, this is the end because we're heading towards this, you know, technology utopia of the Omni device and blah, blah, blah. But now you're in 2023. And it's clear that demand for a dedicated game console isn't diminishing.
Yeah.
Not in any truly substantial way to the point where it's like it'd be foolhardy to keep doing this. Mm. So I think Nintendo, on one hand, it's like, well, we got to try to do the mobile stuff because there's money to be had. I think Fire Emblem Heroes is their number one mobile getter in terms of revenue. Like, they make a ton of money off of Fire Emblem Heroes. Mm. Mario Kart Tour might be second behind that.
Making a ton of money off of me and...
I don't know how Animal Crossing does, but so Nintendo's like, well, it's free money, you know, we dedicate it to this handheld, you know, this portable mobile game, make some cash, it gets our brand out there, hopefully to a wider audience, because their attitude that they have put out in press releases at least is, well, the mobile game should lead you to the console, and then the console's where you get the full rich experience, and you're part of that ecosystem now. Whether that actually works is debatable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like with comic book movies, right? Where people are like, oh, well, you go see the movie, it might get you into comic shop reading comics. It's like, that doesn't usually really happen.
Mm-hmm.
So with the mobile games, I think they play them. And if you play them, I don't think that means you're going to go get a Switch. But Nintendo, I think, is hedging its bets. Because Nintendo is probably sitting and thinking, there might come a time when we aren't making a console. Because truly, the interest in it has dwindled to nothing. And now everyone just has their whatever, and that's all that they use.
The other benefit is that Nintendo doesn't... Like, to some degree, Nintendo can be like, mobile consumers will pay out the ear for all kinds of random nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But console gamers hate that, right? We will lessen our reputation with console Nintendo gamers if we put all these predatory mechanics into Switch games, but we can stack them up in Mario Kart Tour and Fire Emblem Whatsits and just rake in the money without damaging our reputation over here.
The best of both worlds.
I'm a little worried, though. I actually sincerely wonder if Mario Kart 9, they're going to try to pull some bullshit from Tour and just see if they can get away with it.
They might, because, you know, Robert and I were actually just talking about this, I think, yesterday, about how they're taking some elements from Mario Kart Tour and bringing them into Mario Kart 8 with the latest DLC
specifically assets, not like gameplay, but just
no.
Like
but like, you know, multicolored Birdo, for example, is from Mario Kart Tour. And so I do kind of wonder if maybe they're testing the waters a little bit with that and saying, well, you know, you love all the multicolored, like different skins and stuff in Tour, let's see what else you're okay with bringing over from Tour. But I think it's a good place to end it. Okay. So thank all of the hosts here.
Now, hold on. Before we end it, we should have a prediction for who's going to win before.
Well, I think it's a little early because I would like to do another one of these episodes soon. Just kind of checking in. Because we have a whole year. Like, this is going the whole year.
We got a lot of February releases, Angie.
Yeah. So, right. Let's hang off on predictions for a little while. But
Robert.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, hopefully, Dom, you'll join us on our next one. And
only if you'll have me.
Yes. And really not just for this Metacritic, but anytime you want to join us, you know.
It's been
really fun having you on here. So thank you to our listeners for dealing with our long hiatus, but we're back and better than ever. Mm-hmm. So that's it for this time. Catch you guys next time.